Hi guys, welcome to the Markets Report on Decentralized with Cointelegraph podcast. This is Marcel Peschman, market analyst at Cointelegraph, and I'm here with Joel Hall, Cointelegraph global reporter.
Let's analyze this news and really check out what's been going on in the week, because there's a heck of a lot that went on, and It felt like it was catastrophe after chaos after pandemonium, and yet Bitcoin is at 26k. So we've got to make sense of it, and what better person to make sense of it all than with Marcel, who's got, you know, 14 plus years of experience watching the markets, trading them, and helping you guys at home better understand them. So we'll kick off with the Silicon Valley Bank collapse. We've got a recap article from my esteemed colleague Derek Anderson, who's based in the US team. Basically, what happened with this piece, so it's quite a new sort of editorial style that we've been exploring. The idea is to timeline the events chronologically that lead up to this sort of blow-up or this market-moving event, because the SVB or Silicon Valley Bank collapse happened so quickly and had so many different actors involved, that it's actually very hard to follow the thread of that evolution. As it says here, events surrounding Silicon Valley Bank are moving fast. Here is a breakdown of the major developments over the last week. Now, for those who aren't familiar yet, so we've been on holiday for the past week, on a digital detox, on some yoga retreat. The Californian tech bank that most startups used to go to was Silicon Valley Bank. It was a top 20 US bank. So it's got a bigger sort of GDP to this bank than most small countries. You think about Fiji or Tonga, that's smaller than a Silicon Valley bank. Okay, so it's pretty consequential. And it's so important, in fact, that President Biden, or, you know, POTUS, President of the United States of America, he tweeted on March 13th that he is firmly committed to holding us responsible for the collapse of SVP, adding he will have more to say in a later address. However, we didn't get to that point yet, did we? It's going the opposite way. So we're going to start at the bottom and scroll up. Sorry about this, I've done it the wrong way around. It eventually became escalated to the president. But first up, we had the run on the bank and the shutdown by the California regulator. Here you've got to say the size of the scale of it all. Marcel, just before we move on, I know we saw these videos of people lining up outside of this Silicon Valley branches to withdraw cash. Do you think that was sort of exaggerated? I got the impression that it was a bit like, it could have just been a regular ATM queue, you know, on a Tuesday afternoon. Is this necessary?
I don't think it was necessary, because the holders on any U.S. regulated financial institution are granted or have an insurance of up to $250,000 per account in any bank. So I really doubt those guys had over $500,000 sitting at Silicon Valley Bank. But if they did, it was a lousy mistake, because everybody knows that the limit is $250,000. But even if they had, assuming they had $300,000, okay, you cannot withdraw that amount of money on the ATM or even the bank lining up and waiting on a normal day, let alone on when a bank run is going on. So I do think that some kind of desperation for people that have less than 250K, but at the very same moment that the issue started to emerge, the FDIC reassured that they would cover up to 250K. So there was no reason for such kind of panic.
Okay. That's fair. I mean, I think in the UK, where I'm from, it's 70 or 80K that the government technically insures it to. So 250K is considerable. But, and this is quite hard to do, if you put yourself in a multimillionaire or a multi-billionaire's shoes, you might have over 250K in more than one bank account. So you're suddenly thinking, holy crap, what do I do with all this money that isn't technically backed up by the government? Or if you're a business, then how do I insure payroll next month, knowing that bits of money are in this one bank? So it's pretty terrifying. And you can see the consequence of this, because over in the UK, the Bank of England stated that the SVB UK, so the UK branch, will stop making payments or accepting deposits, because effectively it was becoming insolvent over here as well. That led to Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister over here, making comments on it. We'll get to him in a sec. Before we got there, there was a very important piece of crypto news, which is that Circle's USDC to US dollar Circle stablecoin depegged, losing over 10% of its value. The USDC depeg led to this domino effect that knocked several stablecoins from their pegs as well, such as DAI, which is supposedly a decentralized stablecoin, even though most of its, or a lot of its treasury, sorry, is in Circle. That's what caused the issue there. We've since regained the peg from $1, but it did drop to as low as, I think, as 0.9, and I think over the weekend actually went to 0.8.
0.87. I think 0.8786 was the low, but that was during a weekend. So, for instance, what holds the peg of any stablecoin? It is not Circle, the issuing company, that goes on it and try to match the dollar quote. It is not Infinex or Tether, the holding company that trades on several exchanges across the globe to try to maintain the peg. That's not how it works, and people fail to understand that. What makes those stablecoins trades near the dollar, which we call the peg, is the market makers, which are independent from Circle, independent from Tether, and etc. So whenever the stablecoin is trading below the peg, the market maker can simply buy it at 90, 95 cents, send it to Center Circle, which is the issuer of USDC, or to Infinex, Tether company, and convert it to fiat money. But they cannot do that on weekends because the bank is closed. So it happened over times that we're seeing stablecoin depegging, including the USDC, in the weekends. Of course, not so strong because there was not so much demand for selling USDC on a regular weekend. But it can happen because this has nothing to do with the reserves that are sitting there to match the number of coins issued. But in USD coin case, yes, they had over $3 billion, more precisely $3.3 trillion, sitting at the Silicon Valley Bank. So investors quickly turned on the calculators and said, well, if there's $42 billion of USDC and they are potentially, they could be losing $3.3 billion, so it should be trading at a discount of 7% or 8%. Yes, the accounting is right, but it means that an insured bank, one of the top 20 banks in the USA, would not be bailed out or would not be able to recover at least half of the money. So I think investors exaggerated as usual, and whoever sold below 98, 97 cents lost money. Because back on Monday, after the Treasury and the FDIC reassured that no investors from SVB Bank would lose money, the peg was restored to a dollar. So it's never a good idea to trade based on fear.
Mm. So Marcel, quick question. Why is it that the USDC depegged and was able to repeg, but Luna, for example, its stablecoin Terra, wasn't able to depeg then repeg? What's going on here, and what should viewers understand about these two differences?
Because, for instance, let's talk about Tether. Tether supposedly has $65 billion reserves, which matches the outstanding number of coins issued. So if a market maker buys the coin at 0.998, sends the coin to Tether company, and the Tether company says, well, sorry, I don't have the money to pay right now, you're going to have to wait 30 days because of banking system, yada, yada, then what can this market maker do besides going back to the market and selling at a loss at 0.995 or whatever? Because when there's no conversion, doesn't matter the reason, because of failed reserves or because they lost the banking access, then the depeg happens. In Luna's case, most of the reserves were held in Terra coins or in Bitcoins or Ethereum or whatever, and the reserves value did not match the outstanding number of coins. So the market makers smelled the blood of it. They knew that the company would eventually blow up. So they started making sales to push the price below making shorts against the price, so betting on the price decline. So that's one thing that we noticed during the USDC coin peg. Most exchanges started listing USDC against Tether or against another stablecoin like DAI, so people could trade on these price movements, including stablecoins. So what you got, what the viewers gotta have in mind is that the stablecoin, is it normal for fluctuations, especially during the weekend? So, but if the company doesn't have the reserves, eventually it will go to zero.
Wow. Okay. So this is, yeah, a question of reserves. And I guess there's, is there sort of intrinsically more confidence associated with USDC because, you know, it was so heavily banked and therefore it was so heavily backed up by the governments? Is that fair to say? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So okay.
One of the founding members of Circle is Coinbase. It's a regulator exchange. Mm-hmm. So people think, well, Coinbase is not going to let us down because it's a regulated, it's a listed company. So it has a better risk perception from the market.
Interesting. Okay. Whereas obviously Luna was an experiment, a brand new test, right? Anyway, moving on. So March 11th, contagion fears began to spread. So this is when Wales, USDC Wales, these are, you know, entities or bodies that own millions and millions of a chosen coin. In this case, it was USDC. They started to move their funds away from USDC because they thought it was ill-advised to keep their money there as it had lost its peg. And the DAI issuer, MakerDAO, so that's the decentralized autonomous organization that sort of decentralizes but manages DAI or issues the DAI stablecoin. It issued an emergency proposal to mitigate its $3.1 billion exposure to USDC. So that's quite a big bag of USDC that was propping up the DAI or decentralized stablecoin. So they swapped in Curve Finance, which saw a record-breaking $7 billion worth of trading on March 11th. So yeah, it was a busy weekend. The thing is, a lot of crypto bros right now that are quite tired after a heavy weekend. After that, the regulators around the world, but most importantly the US and UK, sprung into action to try to, you know, backstop and prevent this crypto crash from spreading any further. UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak stated that there are immediate plans to ensure the short-term, sorry, I can do my Rishi Sunak impression, there are immediate plans to ensure the short-term operational and cash flows needs of Silicon Valley Bank UK customers. What do you think, Marcel? Good Rishi Sunak impression?
Yeah.
Did I look rich enough? I need to do it stepping out of a Bentley. The guy is absolutely loaded. Anyway,
but he doesn't look like rich. When I see him on screen, he tries to act like a normal people. But do you know his acting?
Yeah. Oh no, he's a centi millionaire. He married into a billionaire family as well. He comes from a lot of money. But yeah, he tries to look down with the kids. So March 12th, Fed creates the $25 billion program to backstop the banks. This is where I'm going to bring in Marcel again here. Where does this money come from? Where is this $25 billion sitting ready to, you know, disperse onto the market? So how do they even come up with this?
Okay, so the government will tell you that they're not using constituents' money. But that was money that was sitting on the Federal Reserve owned by the U.S. Treasury. So it's money that the population, that is owned by the entire population of the United States. So, yes, they have a lot of money sitting doing nothing because they own, for instance, Treasury bonds, which are issued by the government. So they're paying to themselves. So it makes no interest for them. And they can use that to reassure market liquidity. And they also have cash sitting there. But it's incorrect saying that there was no bailout. Yes, there was at least $25 billion. And they posted more guarantees, collateral, in form of cash and treasury bonds that were sitting on the Federal Reserve, which is money from the U.S. Treasury. Even if the Federal Reserve is a separate entity, it's a non-government organization or whatever, because it's a private company. The money they administer belongs to the U.S. Treasury. So technically, it was a bailout.
technically it was a bailout. So there you go. It only took another, 15 years until they bailed out a bank since Satoshi Nakamoto's invention of, of Bitcoin. I forgot what we're talking about there for a second, but that's not good. So we then move to the SVP depositors to be protected, says the Fed on March 12th. So this is where Janet Yellen and her board of cronies, really important people that we should definitely respect, got together, and the FDIC chairman Martin Grunberg announced that decisive actions would fully protect depositors at both Silicon Valley Bank and the now shuttered Signature Bank. So the dominoes are falling pretty quickly at this point. We move on to March 13th. So this is still happening on a weekend. Poor guys. This is when the president tweets saying he's firmly committed to holding those responsible for the collapse of SVB. Who could be responsible for this collapse, Marcel? And what could it be linked to crypto in some way, shape, or form?
I don't think that Silicon Valley Bank had much relationship to crypto because it was more of a startup bank. So related to the technology sector or fintechs and health techs and etc. So it was not a fiat gateway for crypto exchanges, VCs or funds. No, that was not what SVB was. But the Signature Bank, which also failed on the same day, bring some weird vibes, because first of all, it was not a top 10 bank in difficult financial situation. It was not one of the worst 10 in that conditions. And second, because it was the second most important payment gateway for crypto exchanges, funds, and VCs behind the Silvergate, which was shut down earlier this month on March 1st. The Silvergate Bank decided themselves to shut down their operation because they had too much leverage and most of the clients flew away, including FTX and etc. So after Silvergate, the most important bank for cryptocurrency companies in the US was Signature. So the closure of Signature by the government, the FDIC, alleging that the bank was over leveraged, etc., or that they caused systemic risk. I call it BS. I think it's a big lie. I think they're merely trying to suppress cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, no, I loaded that question, didn't I? And I put it in your hand as this loaded gun. But effectively, I'm trying to work out how and in which way they're going to link it all back around to crypto, because it does feel like crypto is under fire, right? Of course, Bitcoin doesn't care because, as every government should know by now, you cannot kill Bitcoin. And even if you try to kill Bitcoin mining, for example, then you killing Bitcoin mining in your own country makes it much more profitable to mine Bitcoin in other countries. So it's maybe not a great idea to do so. We saw that with the China ban, 2 years ago now, when Bitcoin mining was banned in China. It made it more profitable to mine in other places around the world because, of course, the hash rate drops off and it becomes technically a little bit easier, marginally speaking, to mine Bitcoin. Likewise for Bitcoin, the protocol, I mean, I just don't know how you'd kill it without undergoing some sort of major sort of catastrophe, whether it's nuclear war or directing an asteroid to wipe off China from the map of the earth. I'm really putting my tinfoil hat on today. I hope you're enjoying that, Marcellus, because Sam's not here to rein me in and to, act a bit more normal. Okay, we've updated viewers regarding the banking collapses today. It might be worth moving on to the next pieces, which are, of course, all about crypto. This one is in relation to the previous piece. It's from Jesse Coughlin. Probably pronounced his name wrong. Sorry, Jesse, who's down in Australia and part of the Aussie team. So Coinbase, Celsius and Paxos disclose funds in Signature Bank. This is, of course, in relation to what Marcel was just explaining, that Signature Bank was one of the more crypto-friendly banks in the US. So if crypto companies wanted to hold funds or, have that liquidity to transfer in and out of, then this was one of the banks they would go to. And when they were shuttered, some of these companies came out and said, we used to use them, Coinbase, Celsius, and Paxos in particular. Coinbase is probably the most significant.
OKX Exchange was also impacted. And also Binance UK announced today that because of the SVB Silver, the Silicon Valley Bank closure in Europe, they would also lose US dollar in and out in Europe. So both Binance UK and OKX were impacted either by SVB or by Signature Bank.
Well, there you go. So will they get their money back, Marcel? Will these crypto companies be made whole?
Yeah. So far, there hasn't been a single bank where depositors have lost money. So far, it has been covered by either by the FDIC or by the bailout from the government.
Crazy, isn't it? Crazy when you think about the fact that, you know, if you want to start a business in 2023, I would recommend starting a bank. Why? Because if you fail at your business of making a bank, you are guaranteed to be bailed out by the government. So, you know, in the business of banking, there's no failure, right? Or am I misinterpreting this all? Is it not the idea that you can just create these banks out of nothing and away you go? There's no risk. There's no danger of you ever losing your client's money. So you can go on for perpetuity.
Yeah, I think the incentives are perverse, because I worked in the banking industry for over 10 years, and I can tell you from my personal experience, you get your bonus depending on the past year's performance, either in February or March, so the beginning of next year. So you do whatever you can do to leverage the gains or profits from that year, no matter how that's going to impact the bank from 5 to 10 years from now. So that disparity causes, for example, SVB Bank, those guys bought mortgages. So mortgage securities, MBS instruments that lasted for 10 years. And in the first 3 years, while the interest rates were declining, they got a lot of money. So they got big bonuses on the first 3 years. But as the Federal Reserve reverted the strategy and started raising interest rates, the bank started to lose money. So what happened to those bank managers and directors that got paid already for the previous 3 years? They're rich, they're wealthy, they're happy at home. They may even have sold shares of the SVB when the stock was rallying. But for the rest of the population and for the government, that's a huge issue. So the problem here is the bonuses are paid every year, and the directors and managers don't care of how the bank will be in 5 to 10 years.
So it still seems like a pretty good idea to start a bank. You know, I just sell my shares before the company collapses, just like the SVP CEO did. He liquidated, what, 2.8 million worth of shares, like 4 days before the bank collapsed. It's a playbook.
The board of directors sold some $10 million worth approximately 1 week before the collapse. The board of directors.
There you go. It's just wild, isn't it? It's just, you know, predictable, but it's still shocking. You know, this is the behavior that is exhibited from the banking sector. This is why we Bitcoin, people at home. Hey-ho. Moving on to the third article, a part of this sort of piece we're doing this week on crypto banks and the Silicon Valley exposure. This piece is from Stephen Kata, I'm not sure, from the Australia team. I need to work out his surname as well. And his headline is, "Nobody's left to bank the crypto companies." We've got some reactions here from crypto Twitter, so you'll probably recognize some of the faces in this article. But this is effectively what Marcel and I have touched on so far. The loss of crypto-friendly banks could be a risk to USA, and it could also represent the fact that the USA is trying to target crypto companies. So here you have some reactions, such as Lark Davis, who's shitcoiner-in-chief. I'm going to say that's my opinion. So they shut down Signature Bank. Wasn't that like one of the big banks? Oops. Wasn't that like one of the big banks working with crypto companies? Guys? And then we have Scott Melker, another shitcoin in chief. Silvergate, Silicon Valley, and Signature all shuttered. Wow. Try to say that after having a few coronas. That's a tongue twister. Depositors will be made whole, but there's basically nobody left to bank crypto companies in the US. And then finally, we have Melton Demirez, who's not quite a shitcoiner, but she is the lady who built up CoinShares. And just like that, crypto in America has been unbanked. Silvergate, Silicon Valley Bank, Signature in 1 week. So yeah, these people realize that it's quite a significant moment, but could it be? So firstly, where do people go? Where do crypto companies go in America now, Marcel? What are their options?
I don't think that there's going to be a big issue on that, because governments and regulators forget that this money can be sent abroad. Of course, for the average Joe in the United States, it's going to cost a little bit to send money through PayPal or whatever to a foreign account in another country that is more friendly for doing business with cryptocurrencies. So for the average regular user, it's going to cause either a higher cost to transfer the money out, or they're simply going to say, well, it's too much hassle. Maybe I'm going to wait for the ETF or et cetera. But there are multiple ways that even if there's no banking access in the United States, you just send money abroad or use PayPal or whatever transfer remittance instruments that you have, then you can buy cryptocurrencies outside. But I do think that some banks will find, not necessarily banks, but some fintechs will find a way to disguise and to move using foreign entities. So the banking access will be restored. Those exchanges are really good in doing that. So I just want to give another historical example. In Brazil, during the 80s, it was forbidden for a regular person to buy US dollars, unless you were a company or unless you had a ticket to travel to the United States next month, you wouldn't be able to buy foreign currencies. So what happens that multiple kiosks of foreign, unofficial foreign exchange rate started selling US dollars at a 10 or 20% premium, because the market will always find a solution. Yes, there's going to be some additional cost, some additional trouble for the average Joe, but whoever wanted to buy US dollars could simply walk to a kiosk and buy those US dollars unregulated and unregistered.
There you go. You heard it here first. The thing is, though, that with the crypto industry right now in the US, and let's get a bit more conspiratorial. I know you touched on this at the start, Marcel. Why is it that all of these things seem to be happening at once? It feels like, you know, ETH was also mentioned as being a security 2 weeks ago, which is, again, another sort of nail in this crypto coffin that the SEC seems to be building up. And was it 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago? There was another attack on crypto companies and sort of Bitcoin as a whole. If you were a crypto company, where would you look to go? Would it be in the US right now? Or would you think maybe not? Especially with people like Janet Yellen, and Senator Loomis, you know, she's very vocal in her anti-crypto stance. What's your take?
No, Senator Loomis is a voice pro Bitcoin, right? She's on our team.
I'm getting it confused.
Senator Warren. Yeah, I do think that Dubai looks the best crypto hub. But I'm sure that some countries in Europe, such as Estonia, will also be open to receive those companies. But what we got to remember here is, in the first place, Bitcoin was designed to be a financial network and payment systems as it, working by itself. It doesn't depend on banks. It doesn't depend on the conversion for fiat. Yes, at some point, to initiate, the person needs to sell his dirty fiat money to buy cryptocurrency. But you don't need an exchange for that. You can do via P2P, or you can send remittance, the money abroad, using whatever instrument that you have, and buying in whatever country that it is available. So the more doors that the government shuts for people to buy cryptocurrencies, the more sense it makes to buy Bitcoin and avoid being locked up on the CBDC, the central bank digital currency that they're trying to implement. So answering your question, why I think that the Operation Crypto Chokepoint 2.0 is happening right now is to show the importance of issuing the CBDC, so their own digital controlled coin. It's not a cryptocurrency, but it's the CBDC.
Exactly. Okay. And that could explain, and well done for segueing into the next article, that could explain why Bitcoin has been pumping and it's been doing better than nearing 25K. It's actually punched through 25K in the past couple of hours, which is what William Suberg has been calling a multi-month resistance. So for a few months now, Bitcoin has been flirting with that 25K line, but hasn't quite got through it, especially after the past 3 weeks of, you know, this total crypto attack, after what we've discussed today. So this is pretty good news. And also it seems to be that the CPI was the rocket fuel that is currently taking Bitcoin to that moon. As you can see on this, the candlestick chart here, there was a solid pump this afternoon. I'm actually going to get it up on the actual trading view to get a real nice sense of it. There we are, 25,800 at time of recording, which is considerably higher than we were on the 10th of March, where again we touched a series resistance line, 20,000 mark. And if you zoom out a bit more, we are over this sort of resistance, which is the 25K mark, and we're now back up and over the 200-week moving average. All of these are sort of key trading signals or trading levels that traders like to look out for. And it's funny because prior to this article, you know, people were talking about the fact that CPI might bring some consolidation, but the honey badger does not want to consolidate right now, does it, Marcel? It wants to keep pumping, and this is some welcome news. Now you're smiling away.
I don't think that the CPI is the cause behind of the rally. First of all, because the headline, the top number came at 6% price increase year on year, which is substantially above the 2% targets by the Federal Reserve. So they have to continue raising interest rates. But what I think that played an important role is that the bank stocks, especially the regional banks, the smaller banks, bounced today, going up 10%, 15%, up to 50% in case of the First Republic Bank. The stocks are rallying. So people started getting a feeling that, well, if the Federal Reserve says that they're going to bail out any bank, no matter what size, then things are going to definitely spiral out of control because they're going to have to print more money. And this is good news for Bitcoin. So that's why the rally, because of the price gain on banks. If the market had acted otherwise, saying, I still do not think that the Federal Reserve will have enough money to guarantee, to ensure the deposit on all the banks, it would be a whole different story for Bitcoin. But for now, investors are believing that the Federal Reserve and Biden's administration will bail out everyone when necessary, which is excellent news for Bitcoin. That's it for today, guys. I hope you enjoyed. You've been with Decentralized with Cointelegraph. Stay tuned for our next podcast episodes. Thank you.